Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Thank you, Howard, and welcome once again to Big Conversations, Little Bar. As we are in the holiday season, we have decided to feature a few special episodes that look back on the great get-togethers we have had throughout 2025 at Skip Page's Little Bar. This week, we offer an encore of one of our most listened-to episodes all year long. My wonderful co-host Randy Florence landed someone who, since visiting with us, has become a Golden Globe-nominated guest, Nikki Boyer of Dying for Sex fame. So, without further delay, enjoy this best-of-episode and happy holidays to you and yours.
I have to say, kudos to you. You scored a big league guest for us.
I am so excited about this.
This is someone whose podcast you've been listening
to. Yes, yeah. And TV show. Yeah.
Dying for Sex.
Dying for Sex. We should talk about that. And what a coincidence that Nikki Boyer would be here.
Nikki's
involved in. No, thank you so much for being here. This is really a thrill to have you. I've been literally for the last 2 weeks, as I mentioned, your voice has just been in my head a lot.
You're so sweet. I'm so sorry
about
that.
Early.
My apologies. My husband's like, I know that feeling. doesn't ever shut up.
In 107 episodes, we finally have a professional podcaster with us.
We actually, you know, this is when I first got
We've been waiting for a girl like you.
I first started working in banking, and one of my first customers was an old math teacher from high school. And
well, that adds up.
I did not want that because I shouldn't have gotten into banking because I didn't know anything about math. But I was really afraid he was going to know. And
but
now I'm sitting here with somebody.
You had a lot of interest in it?
Oh my gosh, I love the math puns.
How much editing? How much editing can we do on this? We're now talking to somebody who actually does this for a living and has done a lot of this kind of stuff for
I
a living.
Know.
Please do not raise the bar for me.
No.
Let's just keep it low. Let's do the bare minimum.
Well, it started
Let's
low.
Get a little tipsy. Let's just do this together.
Well, we're working on that. Randy doesn't drink anymore.
Oh, good. Congrats.
But I don't drink any less.
It's a much better life.
It has been. Yeah. I have a little harder time with Patrick now than I used to.
Yeah, well.
But we're still. So, Nikki.
I only drink to make other people more interesting.
100%.
Let me get through this.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Nikki Boyer, 3-time Emmy winner.
I know, right?
Am I correct?
Yeah, you are.
You take a bath every day.
How do you know that?
Okay, that's a weird fact.
And why did I tell anybody that?
That's weird.
Was that right?
I do.
She is an actress, singer, songwriter. Executive producer, TV host, has kissed Harry Styles.
Oh, yeah.
Has been photobombed by Beyonce.
Oh, my gosh.
And was born in St. Louis.
That's my favorite.
Is that all right?
That is my favorite introduction of any podcast
We're done. Bye, everybody. Thank you.
All right.
It's literally not going to get any better than that.
Wait, why do you know I take a bath every day? Did I say that?
It was just a hope.
That is...
Thank you very much. That's our show today.
Oh my God.
Your wife is sitting right over there. Too,
I love your wife.
She's pretty cool.
I love your wife, by the way.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, well, let's just start there.
Guys.
Why bath, not shower?
Okay. It doesn't mean I don't shower, though. I want to be clear, right? Like, I bathe and then I rinse off, right? Because that's gross. You just sit in your own. But I love...
You sit in your own dirty water.
That's gross.
That's what my dad always said about that.
Right? I love soaking in a tub. I don't know
relaxing.
Why. I find
it's
relaxing. It resets my body.
Bubble bath. Like, is it... bubbles, candles, is like you go for the whole thing?
I used to do the whole thing, but now it's just like get this stuff done. Sometimes some bath salts, you know. I don't make it super fancy, but we just redid, this is really riveting. It's not. We redid our bathroom and they were like, no, you need to put in one of those gorgeous glass showers that get, and I was like, I want a bathtub. He's like, they're so outdated. Nobody has bathtubs. I'm like, this old lady needs a bathtub. So put the bathtub in and call it a day. But I mean, my
did you get a special one?
Yeah.
Just a standard.
Does it have the claw feet? Those are the cool bathtubs.
I love those bathtubs. No, this is, it's got the, like, the slanted back, and it's big enough for me to extend my legs. I'm only 5'2", so it's not really that big.
So it's a regular bathtub. It's a regular bathtub.
God, I love you guys. This is my favorite show ever.
They told her it was special.
Oh my God.
You'll be able to stretch out in this one, man.
Yeah. They're like, oh, God, she's all whopping 4 inches of her legs.
All of the cast of The Wizard of Oz also bathed in this very tub.
Oh my God.
Right, now that we've got the awkward part of the podcast over.
Right?
I want to talk to you about the singer-songwriter part.
Oh, I love that.
Randy's dying to talk about the dying for sex part.
Okay.
Which just says something about our person.
Exactly.
He brought up baths.
I brought up what?
You brought up baths first.
I did.
Where did you... I want to know. Where did you glean that bit of info?
I have a coffee table book of famous people in a bath. And
there she is.
That sounds kind of fun.
You're page 62.
Whoa. And I'm in it? Yeah. I'm famous enough to be in a coffee table book?
And you
remember
didn't even
when
know.
Kramer made a coffee table book that looked like a coffee table?
Yes. Right. This is a bathtub remember. Book that looks like a bathtub?
Wow. Nikki, I think there's something here.
And all the pages are laminated so you can enjoy it while you're in the bath.
You guys, let's where stuff happens. This is how you came up with this podcast idea. You were here.
We have lost money on every podcast, but now the bathtub
book.
The bathtub book.
Oh, my God.
I like it.
All right, let's talk. I've got to go back to the singer-songwriter.
Okay,
part.
I love that.
So you moved to L.A. like in the late 90s.
Oh my gosh, yes, right out of college.
Right out of college.
Yep.
So you're a kid and you come to the bright lights, big city.
Yep.
But your desire was to continue like the singing-songwriting part, right? Like that was what was driving you?
Well, what was driving me was to do acting, actually. Okay. I really wanted to do acting.
And you did a lot of it.
I did. I was lucky. I got to do some acting and hosting because when I lived in St. Louis as a kid, I was actually the cartoon girl. So, like, I was the host of the kids' cartoon hour.
Which
in
TV
St.
station?
Louis. KPLR-TV. So it was the home of the Cardinals at the time.
Right.
So,
and was it something that you had grown up watching?
Yeah.
Oh,
Channel
that is
11.
So cool.
Isn't that cool?
Do you remember a TV person there, a news person, Melanie Moon?
Absolutely, yes.
Melanie and I worked together in Roanoke, Virginia.
No way.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She's adorable.
And she's wonderful.
We love her.
Yeah, 6 degrees
terrific.
Of separation right
That's
here.
More
yeah,
it's
happening.
It's more
yeah.
like two.
Yeah.
And Melanie has a twin sister.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Melissa. And they're both in broadcasting. And it was hilarious because Melanie, we would get packages on the feed.
Yeah.
Sometimes from her sister who was working in Little Rock.
It really was very confusing for
and
the
so
viewers.
She would toss to her twin sister.
Wait, that is the best thing I've
oh,
ever heard.
Oh, that was
heard.
Hilarious. And then we would always come out of that and always be like, you know, your sister is really, really, she's more attractive than you. Melanie's
so
always mad because they're twins. And she's like, no, we're identical. I'm like, nah, not quite.
I love that.
That's hilarious that you know Melanie.
Yeah,
so you came out of St. Louis.
So I came out here. First thing I did was get a waiting tables job, right, into L.A.
There's a shock.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I met all the casting directors, was waiting on them for lunch.
And where were you waiting tables?
Houston's restaurant. Do you remember that chain?
Yeah,
Houston's,
sure, yeah.
Yep. I waited tables there. It was amazing. Met some of my dearest friends there. And then eventually, this is how the singer-songwriter thing happened. I was living on someone's couch, which is a very LA thing to do. She said to me, do you want to come into the office today where she worked? And you can make some free copies of your resume and your headshot. And I was like, yes, anything that's free. I went into her office. I made the copies of my headshots. And then behind me was a guy who said, hey, I heard you're a singer. And I said, oh, yeah. And he goes, I'm a guitar player. And that then forged the band that I was in for almost 9 years.
You two got together and started a
band.
We
started a band.
Wow.
And then
Spirit Theory.
Spirit Theory, yes. And that's actually how I ended up meeting my husband. Tommy, who was in a different band and produced it.
He looks like a rock and roller. He's got that look to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, he is. He does music composing now for Hallmark films and big in movies and TV shows.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's
does
great.
Does he compose music for any of Ron Oliver's films?
Wait.
Ron Oliver directs and writes Hallmark movies.
Wait, Ron Oliver?
And he lives in the valley here, too.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Episode no, I have six. To ask him.
You have to ask him.
We got
to
make
like
that connection.
Christmas at the Plaza.
Yeah, that's what he's doing.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Ron Oliver's movie.
Oh.
Now it's 0 degrees of separation.
Yeah,
Ron, of course, a guest on our podcast once upon a time.
Oh, I love that.
Nothing's ever come together as well as this podcast has.
And it all started by you talking about her bathing habits.
You're all welcome.
At least I'm clean.
Yeah, it felt awkward.
You're welcome.
At the time.
Well, we're going to get into the rest of it here in a little while.
Yeah, that's true. So, yes, that's how I ended up getting into a band and getting into acting. And
you met your husband that way.
And that's how I met
very, very cool.
Yeah, my most favorite person in the world.
And do you guys still have your band?
We had a band called the Cardboard Cutouts,
right.
And we did some music. And so, I mean, I think we're a band now for the rest of our lives because we're married. But we'll do occasionally, we'll write a song for a Hallmark movie, or I'll do vocals for something he's working on because I'm really cheap. He'll be like, hey, I could go hire a singer or my wife can do it for free. And I was like, well, that works. Yeah. So, yeah. So that's what we, and we lived here now full time down in La Quinta. Down in
really?
The desert. Yeah, we're full time.
Which is where
here
I live.
Now.
When did you decide to abandon LA and come to La Quinta?
It was kind of right after COVID.
Yeah.
And we were like, let's go down there and just check it out. And then we fell in love. And then we bought a house because buying a house in LA, you have to, like, I don't know, hit the lottery. And down here, we're like, oh, we should actually afford something. And then we started more and more.
Don't let other people know that.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you have to be rich.
We bought ours with green stamps.
Yeah. Exactly.
You have no idea how long it took to lick those.
Ew.
Randy.
Remember when you used the lick?
Oh, wasn't that horrible?
So now I'm here all the time. I love being down here in the desert, and it's actually, we both work from home. We're very creative. It's a great space to record music and do creative work because it's so quiet and peaceful down here. So, yeah, you're right. I probably shouldn't tell anybody about how nice it is.
No, don't
stay
tell
away.
No,
don't
no,
come
it's,
here.
It's really expensive. It's loud. There are kids everywhere.
Do you get to spend time around Old Town and the La Quinta?
Yeah, I love
all
it
the
there.
Fun stuff?
That's where I go. We go to the farmer's market on Sunday. We go to the restaurants. We go out to dinner at 4:30 p.m.
Oh, well,
you know, we live it up.
Wells Marvin, our previous guest, would really love hearing
wait,
about.
Wait, from the
Old
Sandbar?
Town? Yes.
Well, he
yes!
owns
he owns Old Town La Quinta
and Old Town and.
Wait, what?
He developed yeah.
One person owns that.
That's yeah. correct.
Can I? How
well,
do we? How do we get to meet him?
Okay, you should have been here
well,
about,
that was
about
number one
four weeks ago when he was on our podcast.
We're gonna have to start calling you and telling you
exactly.
whoever's coming
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and I'll just show up and be weird, and
well,
I'll be like, "Hi."
I think she would be a good source for other guests. She might want to.
Danny Bonaducci hasn't gotten us anybody, not one.
That guy.
I'm going to get you some guests. You're not even going to know what happened because this is going to change.
We pretty much never know what's going on.
No, we really don't. Yeah, Wells was a guest of ours.
That's amazing.
And he talked about how he'd been in development and turned what is now your favorite playground,
beautiful
Old Town La Quinta,
into
what it is.
Old Town La Quinta, when we first moved here 3 years ago, it was summer and it was dead. And Tommy and I, my husband, drove through and we said, is this real? Is it, or is it a movie set? It was so quiet and
looks
dead.
Like it, doesn't
but
it?
Now it is bumping.
Yeah.
Restaurants everywhere. I love living down here. And now you're stuck with me because we're neighbors. So wow. We're going to be friends now in real
well,
life.
Well, not Patrick won't drive that far.
Wait, where are you?
I live in beautiful, scenic downtown Cathedral City.
Oh yeah.
Actually, we're not in downtown. We're in the suburbs.
You won't
by
drive.
The way, your air quality 2 days ago was 352. You're a meteorologist.
What
I thought you'd want to know that.
I wasn't looking at it at the time because I was in the middle of my bath. And so I didn't know. I didn't know what the air quality was. Just taking a bath.
Oh my
Nobody's
gosh.
Doubting it.
Right.
All right, let's get started here.
All right. Have we not started?
Yeah.
No. Oh, are we going? Are we live?
Is this thing on?
Should we start over?
No.
We should start over.
God, no. That would be a waste of tape. That would be a waste of... all right, so...
Yeah.
Molly.
Yes. Oh, my favorite person
and
to
I love
talk
Molly.
About.
And,
do you?
And thank you for sharing Molly with us so I could fall
cry.
In love with her.
Yeah.
And I also have to tell you, this has been really fascinating as somebody who's... beat cancer a couple of times before.
And oh,
has
really?
Had to deal with some issues that mm-hmm. aren't normally talked about. Mm-hmm. It was fascinating to me to listen to this being talked about. So first of all, thank you for that. So Molly was the subject of Dying for Sex, your podcast.
The podcast. Yeah.
And now, ultimately, the FX Hulu show, Dying for Sex, yes. starring Michelle Williams. How did you meet Molly?
We met in acting class right when I moved to Los Angeles in my very early 20s on Melrose. And we were in the same class. And she and I were very different. I thought she was intriguing and pretty, and she thought I was annoying and needy, right? Because I was like jumping around the room and being like, hi, everyone. Hi, it's so nice to meet you. And she was like,
she didn't like that.
She was like, relax. What are you doing?
But you said she kind of carried herself differently just the way she walked
yeah,
in.
Yeah, she just kind of, I called her an alien model because she was like so beautiful. She had, at the time, she had long, long brown hair and these crystal blue eyes and just a really interesting face. And I just thought, God, she's gorgeous. And then we were paired up for a scene together where you have to do a scene study. And I haven't thought of this since just recently, is that that acting teacher kind of changed the trajectory of my life. Because if she wouldn't have paired the two of us up together, I don't know if our friendship would have formed the way that it did, because we spent a lot of time working on that scene, and that's when we actually became really good friends.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with her. She was such a quirky, interesting, thoughtful, very, very smart person, and just loved spending time with me. So if I said, hey, I'm going to go on an audition and I'm going to go to the grocery store, she'd be like, great, pick me up, I'll come with you. So we just spent a lot of time being together, doing really mundane things.
And had she been diagnosed at that point?
At that point, she was healthy and great, and had no idea that she even had cancer in her future. But in 2011, so gosh, we met in, oh my God, 2002?
Mm.
So it was pretty long after she was misdiagnosed. She went into our shared OBGYN. We had the same OBGYN. Don't all girls? Oh, that's weird. That's so weird. But he misdiagnosed her and said he didn't think the lump was anything. And she just sort of had that trust in him. And she was only 30 at the time. And
he told her she was too young.
Yeah. And so I think she thought, oh, I'm overreacting. And, you know, I think that's one of the things I try to express when I'm doing interviews is, always get your mammogram, get your second opinions. Please, like, advocate for your body. And so,
people who don't know, tell us a little bit about Molly, her story.
Yeah.
Tell the story. I mean, I know that the story is told on your podcast and in the show, but give us the
I would love to. So, Dying for Sex was inspired because Molly, when she got her second diagnosis, which ended up being metastatic and no cure, right, stage 4 breast cancer, she kind of had a moment where she was reassessing her life, and she decided to do something really bold and brave, which was leave her marriage of 14 or 15 years and go on a sexual journey for herself, like a real sex quest of just like getting out there, getting into her body, having sex, the sex that she always wanted to have before she got married and didn't get the chance to have. And in the process of doing that, I feel like she healed some old wounds. She got to really understand what she enjoyed in terms of pleasure and sex. And she got to really kind of deeply start to understand herself. And I do think she was ultimately looking for love, right? Mm. Like a deep love. And I think she found it, because by the end of her life, she had really fallen in love with herself deeply and gotten to figure some really beautiful things out about her life. And we did it together because we recorded a podcast, and I was with her when she spent 3 months in the hospital, and we were together
three times a week.
We recorded and stayed creative together, and she actually also wrote her book from her hospital bed. So I think she just a really beautiful example of, like, what do you want to do with the time that you have left, right? That question always rings in my mind. So yeah, that's Molly's story. We did the podcast, and then it became a beautiful television show that just came out in April. And so yeah, here I am talking about her because I love her.
Well, that's one of the things you've talked about, is that you want to continue sharing her story.
Yeah.
And the fact that that story is being shared,
I know, how lucky,
awfully important to an awful lot of people too.
Thank you.
So how Was there any point when you started that? There were a few times during the interview where I could hear you were just shocked at the answer.
Well, yeah, because she was sort of getting into the kinks and fetishes, which I...
Well, the massage story early on.
Well, yeah, the happy ending, yeah, which I was like, go, good for you, yeah. Right? Congrats.
We can tell these stories. I feel like...
Go ahead, tell the massage story.
Yeah, tell me the massage story.
Well, Molly was sick at the time and wasn't feeling good, and one of her other friends bought her a gift certificate to get a massage, and the gentleman came over, and... The one thing led to another, and before she knew it, she was fully getting massaged and, you know...
all parts.
How do we say this?
Above
all
and
parts,
below,
right?
It was a full body massage.
Full body massage. Thank you. Full body. And she realized in that moment that, yes, there was something healing about sex for her. And to be... I mean, this is a little heavy, but I'm going to say it because I think it's really valuable. It's... She had some trauma as a little girl, which she's very open about in the podcast and as well as in the TV show. And she said when that happened to her, like, she kind of split, right? And she didn't...
She was abused.
Mm-hmm, yeah. At the age of seven.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think at that moment, she kind of split off into two different versions of herself and didn't know how to merge her sexual self with herself. And so... Now, when she got this diagnosis, I think that was a real important time for her to do that, to lean into that. And she had so many crazy, fun experiences. I'd pick her up at like 11, right? 11 a.m. And she'd be like, well, I had two dates. And I'm like, who dates before 11? She's like, well, I did some stuff in the parking lot of the Dunkin' Donuts. And I was like, what? What? Was he cute? And she's like, he was hot. And I was like, well, tell me more. And then I had a moment where I said, I think there's a story here, and I think it's called Dying for Sex. And she was like, oh, let's do it. And I was like, I don't know what this means, but I think we should start documenting this because I think it's really, really powerful. Because men, no offense, guys, but you guys get to do sexual things, and people look at you and go, oh, look at you. Like, good right. for you. But when women do it, they're called a slut, or that's, you shouldn't do that. And Molly was like, screw that. I'm doing what I want to do, and I don't care
when
what anybody
you're dying,
else.
Okay. The opinions don't matter.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, reckless abandon, but taking care of herself at the same time. But yeah, I think when you at one point I said, like, you better be careful, like, that nobody does anything to you or nobody hurts you. And she goes, what are they going to do? Kill me? I'm dying. Yeah, that's how Molly was.
Now here's this part of the story that I loved.
When you asked her, ending part that you loved.
When you asked her. If she tipped the guy.
Well, after the massage, she was like, well, he packed up and he left and it was great. And I kind of felt pleasure and it ignited this whole thing for me. And I was like, well, did you give him a tip? And she was like, no. And I was like, I was appalled. I was like,
that's for 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's what I wanted to know. Like, that was what I was interested
but
in.
But I agree with you.
But, I've been don't
like,
you?
Yeah. Yeah, like.
You she never worked in the service industry. She doesn't know.
For quality service.
That was my last massage.
Let's be honest.
I never did another
one after that.
Yeah, that was it.
Oh, my gosh. No, she did not tip the guy.
Like an
and
ending,
I was mad.
Randy.
So, as this was all unraveling and you were having these conversations, how was Nikki about sexuality? Were you open with these conversations?
Yeah. I mean, I had judgment. Of course, every good friend has to be like, what did you do?
You did what? Yeah.
Why would you do that? Beautiful thing about Molly, and I, looking back, I have so much respect for her, is that she never looked at anybody's kinks or fetishes or ideas of what they enjoyed sexually with any shame or judgment. On the other hand, I had enough for both of us because I would go, wait, why? Or ooh. And she'd say, you can't do that with people. Like, you really have to just kind of meet them where they are. And if you enjoy what they enjoy, great. But if you don't, you can't judge it. It's just not a good thing.
What was one of the things that you're just like, well, wait a minute.
Can I say it?
Yeah. Oh, yes,
okay.
You can.
I'm just making sure. There was a guy
We're
that was
governed by the same place that your podcast
okay, go
is.
Yeah, if you can say it on your podcast, you can say it on ours.
Yeah, it's in the show, and it's in the podcast, but there's part of it that's not shown, but I'll tell you that part.
Okay.
There was a guy that really enjoyed...
This is my favorite podcast okay, so far, good. By the way.
I knew it would be.
Yeah.
There was a guy that really enjoyed to be urinated on.
Okay.
Right? Fine. Great. But what we didn't show in the podcast was that he requested... This is so gross. He requested... to drink the urine as well. So, like, he would say, and she would say, I'm not into that. I don't want to engage in that. But he'd say, can you just leave it outside your doorstep and I'll come and pick it up?
And this guy was like Hollywood handsome, right?
Very cute. Your face is exactly how I was feeling.
Well, look.
Are you enjoying that warm beer?
Like, yeah, now I really would prefer a different drink choice at this point. None of that totally shocked me.
No?
Until you got to the part where he wanted it left outside. I mean, like.
Yeah, right. Then it goes, well.
Because you're like, that never leaves my house. That's the way you feel.
Urine.
No, I do think, though, that is a good. I mean, I think the beer is a good analogy. Like, it should be right out of the tap, or why bother?
There's a head joke in there, but I can't figure it out.
Like,
out of the tap.
Is it part of the kink? Like,
I thought so, but apparently not for that guy, right? And then there was another guy that wanted to be like.
I really
kept
need a gin and tonic.
Yeah, you
now.
Do.
I need something clear.
Do you want me to get the bartender? Nothing warm and yellow, please. I know. I know.
My dad used to have a joke. He'd get a beer that was a weird color. He'd say, I'm sorry, sir, but your horse has diabetes. And now I feel like I can't drink this. Like,
I ruined your whole day.
No, but about a third of my beer, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good story.
So now that while we're going down this rabbit hole,
yes.
What were some of the other ones that were just kind of showstoppers for you?
Were there
things that you just couldn't put in the show?
Yes, there were a couple. Mm-hmm. I don't even think I can say them out loud, but
no.
I can tell you one that I can say out loud. There was a guy that she was dating that was a clown. And, the TV show...
About this point, Harpo's going to walk in. You know.
Oh, my God. The clown from down here in the desert.
Harpo, yes.
You understand that, like, at first I was slightly terrified. Because I didn't know that it was, like, a fun-loving... I thought it was, like, some guy, like...
No. He's a by all accounts, a nice guy.
I don't want to get
such
you...
Such a nice guy.
I don't want to get
so
you off
sweet.
Track here, but when I first moved to town, I worked in a bank. And the first day, he walks into the bank.
And you thought you were being robbed.
And I thought, that's it, I'm
that's
dead.
That's it, I'm dead. That's what I thought when I saw him driving.
Clown is killing me in the bank.
Yeah, done. Exactly. That's what I thought when I saw him driving next to me. And then I realized, this is not, like... You know, a serial killer. This is like a human being that brings joy to people. So we love him.
Well, we don't know.
He could also be a being.
He could also be a killer.
We actually are going to have him as a guest.
We're
going
to... He's not going to... No.
Oh,
he's not
I got excited.
He will talk. He will type to you. He has a Facebook page.
Yeah.
And he wrote a book.
Wait, what?
He's not non-communicative.
The book's up there.
He's just... He won't talk to you. But he communicates in other ways.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, he's not... Right. It's not he's trying to be a clown. He just doesn't like people.
Right. Don't blame
So he doesn't want to talk to anybody.
That's right.
The least appealing job if you don't like people is clown.
Right. So back to your story. She was dating a clown who ostensibly was not Harpo.
Right. No, it was not Harpo.
As far as we know.
He was more of a steampunk clown, which I didn't know existed, but like that vibe, right? But he also happened to be a mortician. And so I think by day, clown, by night, mortician. So she went to the mortuary. I think that's where they do it.
That's where they, yes.
And they had lots of conversations, and I think they hooked up a little bit, right? They did their fun stuff. And
in the mortuary.
Yes.
You have a problem?
Yeah.
Are you dying to do that?
Sorry, I was coughing there.
So the next day, I show up at her front door, and she was actually at this point not feeling well at all. The chemo... had kicked in. She had lost her sort of energy, and she comes to the front door, and she's exhausted and tired, and I'm bringing her soup, and she's in a cute little nightgown. She turns to the right, and I see clown makeup just smeared down the side of her face, and I said, well, was he dressed up at work? And she's like, no, but he met me there to show me some things, and he had just gotten off his clown duty, so there was a merge of clown, mortuary, sex. So, yeah.
She had sex with a clown in the mortuary, is what you're saying. I just want to be clear.
Doesn't it sound kind of hot?
No. That is not on my list.
If I officially made you uncomfortable on your own show.
No, I'll be honest. I'm not uncomfortable with that at all. I just want to...
I got pictures.
It's like Colonel Mustard in the library with the candlestick.
Tarp on the Clown in the mortuary with Molly.
We are really breaking new ground on this
episode. But you know what I love about Molly is that she always met people where they were and never shamed them for their things. Because a lot of times what you enjoy in terms of fetishes and kinks can come from a place of trauma or things that you had gone through, and you're trying to heal wounds and you're trying to fix things within your body and your mind. And she was willing to kind of just experiment and meet people where they were and no judgment. And I just really love that about her. She was really brave in that way.
So on the podcast, I hear your moments of incredulousness and some of the things you're like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. But what I don't remember hearing in the podcast at any point were times where you said, oh my God, Molly, are you sure you want to do that? Or was there ever any time where you were fearful for her on something she might be going through? Or were you just giving her the space to live her own life?
I think there were moments where I thought things that she was doing, I was like, wait, why? What? But overall, the overarching goal that she had, I never had any feelings like that. I don't know why. I think when someone tells you that they're dying, you immediately go, okay, let's figure, how do you want to live the rest of your life? And when someone comes to you and tells you how they want to do it and what they want to do, knowing that that ticking clock is right there, it's really easy to be supportive.
It's unconditional love.
It takes away a lot of the you know, the protocols that we live by.
Yes, exactly.
Because they seem sort of useless at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. And I also knew, I did want to say this, we joke and we laugh, and we have fun with Molly's stories, but throughout all of it, she was digging deep, learning things about herself, going to therapy, like she was really doing work on herself, also while sexually exploring, so she just wasn't trying to F her way through life, she was really trying to figure some things out for herself.
No, and it had a purpose, clearly.
I mean, yeah. Thanks. Yeah.
Very, very cool stuff. Interesting.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break. We want to thank our sponsor, the McCallum Theater, and we hope that maybe they've missed a portion of this one. but we'll be right back.
Paul Anka live at the McCallum Theater, January 2nd through 4th. Experience all the hits, including
Put Your Head on Mine,
and many more. Join us for an intimate evening filled with the legendary songs behind a 7-decade career. See an icon live on stage. Get your tickets now at McCallumTheater.org.
And we're back. Again, our thanks to the McCallum Theater. So go to McCallumTheater.org. And we are here with Nikki Boyer, who's telling just incredible stories about her podcast and now FX show, Dying for Sex.
Yep.
So talk about, I'm gonna reel it back in just a little bit.
Please do. And somebody has to.
Well, I know Randy.
You're not going to be able to reel it too far.
Randy's still contemplating what container do you put the urine in when you set it outside?
Tupperware.
No, because I have to put leftovers in that. I'm not putting it in Tupperware. Thank you very much.
Oh my God! Now the visuals are. I'm like right there.
Yeah, you got to start thinking about
it. Yeah, I'm like, that's all.
Sometimes you have those jars left over from stuff that's what you.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, that's
the pickle
really,
jar.
She's starting a new podcast called Two Creepy Guys in a Bar.
Two creepy. So, no.
One
creepy guy and Patrick. I do want to point out that I was not the one who knew that she only took baths. Like, you knew that right off the bat.
It was the first note I had.
Oh, my God, it was. Why did I put that up there? Sometimes I just need to stop talking. That's the problem, is I just talk.
Well, we have to wonder where that did come. No, I want to talk about, so you had this very successful podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Translate that into the TV show, the kind of the business side of that, because you're the executive producer of the TV show. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a cool opportunity.
I know. Come on, right?
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, one of my favorite stories of how the podcast came to be and then how the TV show came to be was that Molly was really sick, and we had had all these recordings of her sort of fun sexual escapades. And she was in the hospital, and I thought, gosh, I want these to be released to the world before she passes away, right? So I was going to release them on my YouTube channel. And then I thought, you know, I know this guy that I met years ago from Wondery, which is the company where we did the podcast. And I reached out to him and I sent him the episodes and I said, my friend and I are working on this, but thought you'd be interested. And I never heard back. And so...
Jackass.
Yeah, right? Great. Oh, dear he. Great lesson.
Damn clown.
Always, yeah. Always follow up. So I was about ready to release the episodes on YouTube, and Molly was in the hospital not doing well, and I reached out to Hernan Lopez, who was the CEO of Wondery at the time, and I just said, hey, following up, I'm going to release this. If I don't hear back from you, great, but I just want to let you know. And he said, do not release it. Come into my office. And I went into his office, and we had a long conversation about Molly, and he said, I want to meet her, and he showed up at the hospital, and he met her and sat next to her while she was in her hospital bed and said, I'm going to help tell your story. So just know it's in good hands. And that's how the podcast came about. So that was very serendipitous and spiritual. And then when the podcast was released, immediately there was interest from television that said, this is a really powerful story about women, about friendship, female friendship, love between two women that's just so deep. And we think there's something really magical here. So I was lucky enough to be along for that ride.
And were there sex. Any that
there
were
was
like,
a lot of sex.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah, sex. Yeah.
Were there any that were like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, that's yes. the topic?
They're like, exactly. They're like death and sex.
Yeah.
First of all, how are we going to sell this? Who's going to want to sign up for, you know, those are two really taboo topics. I mean, sex is fun, but when it's attached to death, it can be a lot. And
it
yeah.
gets less fun. Yeah.
Wait, death or sex?
Both. <That's> sex.
So yes, yeah, so
I would think conversely, well, yeah, sex would yeah, make no, you're death right, a lot
yeah.
more fun.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. You're right. I didn't put that to you. Thank
so you.
You
can roll that into it then.
Right. But we didn't know how it would be received, and people really, really loved it. It cracked people open. It caused people to sort of hold up the mirror to their own lives and look at things. I mean, I don't know if you're openly, if you openly talk about what it was like to have cancer and what it was like to have your health sort of like the rug ripped out from under you. It shifts things for you. Did yeah. it shift how you looked at the world?
100%, including yeah. physical things,
yeah.
you know, that were impacted by that. Yeah. Definitely. That's one of the I mean, this would be the most enjoyable podcast I've ever listened to anyway, just because of the relationship between you and Molly. But the other things that have come out of that, you know, listen, I've been married 44 years, so this has actually caused my wife and I to ask some questions
yeah.
about...
Has Kay asked you to dress up like a clown?
She threw all the Tupperware away, like, immediately. But it's
no, I love that.
Just questions about would you have liked that?
Yes.
You know, it's never going to happen now, but would you have liked
right,
that
right, right.
sometime
That's
in
funny.
The past?
Right, but yeah. I think it causes people to just step outside of the comfort zone. I love uncomfortable conversations, talking about things that are kind of taboo. I love talking about that. I think that actually creates connection and closeness when you can get through that uncomfortable moment, and then you're like, oh my God, we're talking about this. I find that to be really freeing, and Molly did that all the time. So she encouraged me to do that with her story, and the ripple effect has been just cracking people open, and people are just so happy to be receiving this story, which I didn't know how it was going to land when it first came out, and I'm blown away by how it feels.
Did you have... Michelle Williams is,
oh
the, is the star of the show,
right?
And how unbelievable is she? Did you have any say in who played you?
You know, they asked me my thoughts, and they would send over. It was very fun to be in this position where they send you over like an acting reel of a very famous person, and you're like, oh, let me just observe their years of work in a 4-minute reel and give my opinion.
Thumb
like,
up or
right?
Thumb down.
Exactly,
yeah.
exactly. But I mean, there were lots of names tossed around, but when Michelle Williams signed up to play Molly, it had to be the right Nikki that paired up with Michelle. And when they called me over, it was over Christmas break, and said, Jenny Slate. And I thought, oh my God.
And you knew who
yes,
she was.
Yes.
She's incredible.
Isn't she great?
Yeah.
And I think she's a stand-up comedian. She's very funny. She does a ton of improv. But her sweet spot is she's really good at drama. And I think she got to play a role that I think she was really ready for.
So how much of her is like you? Were you the kind that would all of a sudden just start yelling at somebody because they didn't think they were you didn't think Molly was getting her respect or that the doctor was doing the right thing?
What? But you said it, now you didn't hear that question. I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
So that was nothing like your real personality.
The part that wasn't like me was like the disorganized, the big giant bag of shit she couldn't like. But
that
if
was
you,
crazy.
That was fun. But that would have been me like 15 years ago when I was just a little chaotic. But my husband always says, have you seen your desktop of your computer? It literally looks like a giant bag filled with nothing's labeled right. So there are parts of me that are like that character very much. But to stick up for your friends, and when someone's doing something wrong to somebody, I am the first to stand up and start like telling people off, which is not a great quality, but I'm very fiercely loyal.
Where'd that come from?
That's a good question. That's deep. My childhood.
Yeah.
Just sticking
were you
up for everybody.
To have to stand up
which
for yourself?
Parent?
Exactly.
Let's drill down. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. I will send you a bill for my therapy. Or you should send me the bill, actually. Yeah, you send me the bill. Wait a minute. Hold on.
How it works.
Yeah.
Wait a second. That's not how it
works. That's a new model. I like that business model.
Right? So much better. I think when I was young and I was in grade school, I always felt the need to stick up for the kids that didn't know where they fit in. And I don't know where that came from before that, but my first memory was always feeling like the bullies, I couldn't stand a bully. And so I would then stick up for the kids that didn't know where to sit at lunch or that didn't fit in. And I just feel like I've always been doing that my whole life. So my threshold for bullshit is really small. So when somebody starts to be disrespectful to a waiter or be mean in a parking lot, like I will open a door. And I mean, I've gotten in trouble too. And I've almost, you know, been injured along the way a few times. But I can't stand seeing injustice.
Like you're getting into fist fights with people?
Well, not fist fights, but like I think people like, you never, well, maybe. All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Fine. I got into a fist. Right. Yes. All right. Yes.
All right. Good. It's good to get to the real story. It's what therapy is all about, Nikki.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
just,
you got to be honest. If you're not honest with me, I can't help you.
You said before the podcast that your spirituality was way above average. In an interview, you said this, and now it's through the roof.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Describe what that means.
I love that you guys have good questions.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He's the entire research department. He's very good at it.
I was raised Catholic, and I went to an all-girls Catholic high school. I was a very Catholic kid. I learned my love of music being Catholic.
Well,
I just
explained everything.
Yeah, exactly, right? But I don't consider myself religious really at all anymore. But I am very tuned into just the serendipity of the world and spiritualness and connectedness. And there's a reason we're all kind of going through things together. And, you know, you cross paths with people and you're like, gosh, one slight move and we wouldn't have, you know.
There was no way you weren't going to meet Molly.
Isn't that wild?
Right?
I know. Yeah. I know. But yeah, something was going to intersect. So I think when I had that experience when Molly passed away, it got rid of any doubt that I had of some sort of communication after passing, because I was laying next to her bed and my hand was on her leg and her hands were nowhere near mine and she was completely sedated and I fell asleep and I felt something tap under my fingers hard enough to wake me up out of a really deep sleep. And when I woke up, her mom was sleeping next to her, and it was dark in the room, so I kind of like made my way up to her and I put my hand on her head and my other hand on her chest, and I was right there and she took her last breath. She woke me up. She woke me up to tell me, or somebody did, something did that was outside of the human realm to wake me up to be there for that last breath. And I don't think, I mean, you could say it might have been intuition, but like something woke me up with a tap on my finger. And so that makes me feel like it feels undeniable that there's something that's outside of us. So that makes me feel really in touch with my spirituality, and I don't have to have it figured out. I don't fucking know, no, right? Like, no. I don't really know the answers, but I know that there's something, and I feel a spiritual connection with just the other side. I don't know. Do I sound woo-woo?
No.
Do I sound woo-woo?
No.
A little bit. A little bit.
A little bit?
No. That is way, way more normal than talking about what container you would put urine in for someone to take it home. So this feels okay.
That actually raised the podcast.
But I want to talk, you know, you chronicle, you don't just chronicle, you lived Molly's last days.
Yeah.
I mean, you get to tell her story. I mean, in essence, you are the keeper of the flame here. Mm. And you've told it through the podcast or the television show. But tell me a little bit about just that has to be also, it's a great comfort, but it also has to be a great drain to have gone through every emotion with her.
Yeah.
And to be so close and to be so bonded and to lose someone like that. So tell me a little bit about the roller coaster ride that is that as you continue to tell her story.
It's been, it forces me, even though it's about her, it forces me to really get to know myself deeply, right? Like really deeply. Understanding grief, understanding self-care. That's why I take a bath every day. You know, we joke about it, but like really, it always comes back to the bath. I've learned more through her death about life than I ever thought possible. And she would always make jokes and say things, and I was just telling your wife this before we sat down. Kay was asking me some questions, and I said, she would always make jokes like, I'm the most important person in your life. And I'd say, well, yeah, I mean, you're one of the most, I mean, yes, I love you, my husband, no, I'm the most, like, I'm your soulmate. And I'd be like, okay, right, you're my soulmate. That's a little dramatic, but okay. And now here I am 6 years later, and my husband, you know, said to me not that long ago, he's like, she's your soulmate. Wow. Her soul is working through you. You're sharing her story, and you guys are so incredibly connected. So I've learned a lot about myself in this process, and I am 100% drained, like so fucking drained, but like in the most beautiful way possible. Like not drained, like I'm so tapped out. I've just been so like plugged into life that I'm a little drained. So that's why I take a bath. That's why I get massages, not the happy ending kind. Thank you very much.
Nope. There's no judgment.
Never had one.
Well, at least not on that topic.
But a bath and a massage and like self-care. Like I really try to practice that. And time with my husband is so valuable. Like it's really caused me to like get very clear about what I want my life to look like. And what am I filling my days, my final days? Because we don't know how much time we have left. So she's really made me accountable and also unapologetic. Like, who gives an F what anybody else thinks? And I say stupid shit all the time, and then people put it on their show, and I'm like, why did I say that?
But that keeps getting you on people's shows.
God.
Yeah, you were actually on the bubble until we found out about the bath. And I'm like, oh, no, we should have her on. Yeah. Like, that's
we had a guy from the McCallum who was going to be here, but we're like, no way.
And then we had a guy from a mortuary who was going to be here.
That clown.
But he couldn't make it.
So, yeah, I love that question, though. It's very sweet because, there is a part of me that that feels tapped out, but also tapped into. Like, I'm so grateful that I get to do this with my life for her life, and it makes my life better, you know?
Is there ever a time where you have to walk away from Molly just to get away from it a little while, or is it just all-encompassing?
No. Yeah. I feel like she's kind of guiding me and giving me signs of, like, how to make my life better. No, it's weird. I don't feel that way with her.
Yeah.
Maybe I should. You know what I mean?
In listening to the podcast, you can almost feel that she felt like she had that role a little bit with you.
Yeah.
You know, like what she was doing was not just for her. It was for you also.
Well, because she said to me about a week before she died, she said, I've watched you work so hard in this business and try to get a project or get that next thing that can kind of get you out there as a storyteller. Cause at the end of the day, I just want to tell stories, right? And it's hard. This business is so hard. And I'm going to be 50, so it's not like I'm like this 20-year-old hot girl who's like out there like, hey, let me tell. It's hard for me right now. And she said, I really hope that somehow my death and what we're doing together makes your life better. And it has changed my life immensely. And I'm just so grateful to her. She's so cool. She's just the coolest.
What is the next story you're going to tell? Have you identified it?
Yes. Okay, so I started my own company called Dying for Media, and I've had...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. I don't even know what that means. I started my own company. I made a name.
Well, I said congratulations, like it should mean
something. It means you pay $800 a year to the franchise tax board.
Oh, my gosh, shut up.
Congratulations.
No, I actually have a really great business partner, and we are pitching stories. So I love leaning into stories that are about real people that just feel unreal. I love giving a voice to people that have these... And I'm sure the two of you, if we sat down and I picked your brains and I picked apart your life, we'd probably find a compelling, amazing story in the two of you that could help other people. And I think everybody has a story. So right now I'm working with hospice nurse Julie. She's famous on TikTok. She's kind of a badass. And she helps people die every day. She's going into people's homes and helping them create a beautiful experience around death and getting people to talk about it in a really beautiful way. So we're working on a show together. And then also Molly's chaplain, which is so funny because Molly was Jewish and didn't practice religion at all, but she found a female chaplain that she fell in love with at the hospital who she just adored. And that chaplain helped give her the spiritual care that she needed to get before she died. And so Chaplain Peggy and I did a podcast called Near Death. There's 15 episodes of it, and she explains her road to being, you know, what it's like being a chaplain in a hospital in Los Angeles, and it is riveting. The stories that happen in a hospital
I can imagine.
Are riveting. So, yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
Do you feel like Molly, you said, you know, she had trauma at an early age,
yeah,
and her diagnosis sort of put her on this quest.
Yeah.
Did she find the peace that she was looking for? Did she, was she able to kind of sew those to heal the split?
Yeah, it's so funny you ask that, because she, when she wrote her book, it's kind of a love letter to herself, and the title of the book is Become Screw Cancer, Becoming Whole. And I think she was really able to merge those two parts of herself while she was dying and forgive herself and forgive the people around her and really become whole and deeply fall in love with herself. So I think she really did get what she intended.
Was there anything that she had wanted to do that she ran out of time on?
She really...
Two clowns.
Makeup on both sides of the face.
Yeah. That's good. Why didn't I think of that? Damn it.
You can use it.
Yeah, thanks. She really wanted to travel, deeply wanted to travel, and every time she booked a trip, it would get canceled, or it would get her health would get in the way, or chemo, or she'd get sick, and so many canceled train tickets and plane tickets. And when it's in the podcast, and it's actually made it to the TV show as well, when she died, she said, I said, are you afraid? And she said, yes, of course I'm afraid, but I finally get to go. I'm going to cry. I finally get to go on a trip where there's no consequences. And it's not going to be canceled. And it's a trip just for me. And it's going to be colorful and beautiful, and I can't wait to go. So I feel like, in a way, she got the trip she had always desired. I hope she did. Yeah.
I read that you've been contacted by some of her dates.
Yes.
Since the show came out. How's that gone?
Right? The guy that was the first guy that she hooked up with that... It's so dirty, but like had a premature situation out of the car. Like he accidentally got it too excited and didn't know what to do. So he had to just get out of the car, and that made it to the TV show. He and I are really good friends, and I love that guy to death.
He must love that you know that about him too.
That's right. That's why they're staying friends. I'm never letting her out of my sight.
Exactly. He is one of my favorite humans. There were a couple other guys that...
When you called him, he came right away, is what you're saying.
2 seconds.
Sorry.
Oh, my God. But I love that he was willing to be so vulnerable and share that story to help tell Molly's journey.
And it was me.
Oh, my God.
It's in the trailer. It's in the coming attraction.
Yeah.
The coming attraction. My God,
I'm
Patrick.
I don't know what's gotten a hold of me.
I'm trying to think of more puns, and they're not coming. Damn it. Some of them have reached out via Facebook or Instagram and said, I saw
Molly's
story. Did
the happy ending with this reach out? That's it.
No, but it's really interesting because I wish he would have. Like, I almost wanted to send out a call to action so I could finally tip him.
Here's $200. Here's
poor guy.
Here's the $50 he really owed you.
Exactly. Thank you. Some people have been reaching out via Instagram and saying, like, hey, you don't know me, but I was one of Molly's guys, and she was amazing. This podcast is beautiful. So I think it's reaching some of the gentlemen that she was going back and forth with. And there were quite a few of them over the few years that
188
she was,
or something like that.
How do you know?
What?
How do you know that number? You know everything.
I read.
You are like an encyclopedia.
I'm the Rain Man of podcasts.
He is. Walk Nerd 4.
Yeah. What, right? Oh, so, my God.
Besides the podcast and your ladybug tattoo.
Oh, my God, right.
Is there anything else that you've specifically...
How do you know about the tattoo?
Well, you get enough pictures out of a bath, and you see things.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, it's okay. There you go.
I got
it's
a,
in the bathtub book.
I got a ladybug tattoo. Molly used to gift me everything ladybugs. And do you know that psychic named Teresa Caputo?
Yeah.
You know
her?
So I did. Yeah.
She's here all the time.
Yeah, she is. So yeah. I was on a I did a podcast with her, and at the end of the podcast, she goes, "Can I ask you a question?" She goes, "Do ladybugs mean anything?" And this was before I publicly said anything about ladybugs. And so every time I see a ladybug, I always think of Molly, and I feel like it's her way of. And then I put one permanently on my neck, so now she's always with me. But yeah, needless to say, I'm slightly obsessed with my best friend.
I imagine you are.
Right?
Yeah. It's fantastic.
What a wonderful. Thank you so much.
You guys,
for coming and spending the time
with
us. I mean, I can't think of a more entertaining way to spend.
I knew it was going to be good.
Yeah. You called it.
You guys, seriously,
Nikki, it meant a lot
thank
to
you.
Nikki Boyer, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Our thanks to you for spending some time with us, for your husband for letting you come in. And
well, I think we've lost
away
our husband
we've
to my wife.
He's
over
with
there.
The wives.
Oh, he's over there now.
Yeah.
He's
looks
over
like
there
you
now.
And I are going to be heading to dinner together, Nikki. So.
Can I just say, like, before we wrap up, like, you guys have asked the most thoughtful questions, and we've laughed the whole time, which were two of Molly's favorite things to do, be super heady and talk about really deep stuff and laugh our asses off, and that's what we've done, and I'm wearing her ring right now. This is her ring.
I was looking at that.
I forgot it was hers, and I looked down, and I went, so I feel like she's here with us, so she would have loved you guys. She would have loved you, so thank you for a great interview. I appreciate you.
And thank you for sharing her.
Made sure that people will know she was unforgettable.
Yeah,
so. Job well done.
Thanks.
And we look forward to what's next.
Yeah, I'll come back.
Oh, we'll have you.
Whether you invite me or not.
Every other week.
That's right. You can be 108, 110, 112.
Wouldn't it be great if we did it and when she walks in, Harpo is sitting here?
Oh,
that would be fantastic.
Dream big.
And then we can do a remote at a mortuary.
Let's
and then we'll
it.
Bring the whole thing together.
I just
right
want to
there.
Do a remote so bad.
Right there. I know you do. Yeah. I know you.
I'm but dying thanks. To do that one.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, people are dying to get in that place. My thanks to John McMullen.
John,
my thanks,
woohoo, John.
Of course, our guest, Nikki Boyer, and Mr. Randy Florence, a superb get, sir.
Thank you.
Outstanding.
I've been for a year now. It's up to you.
That's, okay, good.
Well, Frank Sinatra's
coming
on.
I'm going to get Nikki's number so I can call her and say, give me some guests. So. Thank you, folks, for listening. This is another edition of Big Conversations, Little Bar. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode. And remember, support the McCallum Theater and support Skip Page's Little Bar because they're always here for us. And be sure to listen. We are available wherever you get your podcasts.
Meet your neighbors, fascinating and grand. Each conversation, a wave on the sand. Raise your glass and join the ride, where stories and dreams fully collide. At Big Conversations, Little Bar, brought to you by McCallum, our guiding star. And Randy, tales retold.